Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Glad you could join us. Tonight on Beneath the Surface, we go beneath the surface on the topic of loneliness. There's been an epidemic of loneliness in contemporary American life today that has led to other very dangerous things and behaviors. What are some of the causes? What are some of the potential solutions? So we will delve beneath the surface on this topic of loneliness tonight with my first week of the month guest, Mr. John Tudorus.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm here so you are not lonely in the studio.
You're here so that I'm not lonely in the studio.
Yes, otherwise, who would you get to talk to?
Good point. I would talk to myself since people are not calling in. So why don't I give
them
the phone?
Well, you can talk to me.
Oh, of course.
Woo-hoo!
There's
hey,
Cindy behind the glass, who is always worth talking to. And there's, of course, you at home or in the car. You're very much worth talking to. I wish you would call more often here at 978-454-4980 is our BTS hotline. If you want to jump in on this topic or any topic of your choice here on Beneath the Surface for the next hour, 978-454-4980. All right. Cindy, how are you this week?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good. Complain, I can't. John, how about you?
Complain, cannot I either.
And what voice might that have been?
That was a quasi-Yoda.
Oh, okay.
Sounded like the Cookie Monster.
Well, you know, see, am I the only one who thinks the Cookie Monster and Yoda sound in... No, I'm sorry, Grover. Grover and Yoda.
Grover and Yoda.
And they are both voiced by Frank Oz.
Honestly?
Yes.
Same guy?
Same guy.
Oh, wow. Now, I know who Yoda is.
Yes.
But I do not, I've never really watched any Star Wars movies, believe it or not.
It's okay. I know you're not a big story guy, except if that story involves sports or songs that are 4 minutes or less.
Yeah. Religion, music, sports. I guess those are my things. And if you tell me a story, as long as it's less than a couple of minutes, you're all right with me.
And that's why songs are okay.
Yeah, exactly. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano here with John Tudorus. Our main topic tonight, loneliness. An epidemic of sorts today, John.
Yes.
Now, I'd like to perhaps loosely divide our show tonight into three segments. The first as the causes, the second as the effects, and the third as potential solutions. All right? So causes, effects, potential solutions. Loneliness can be a very painful thing. Let me begin with a story that I heard third hand, so I don't know how accurate it actually is. But an American reporter was driving or was in the presence of Mother Teresa. And I'm not sure if they were overseas or in this country. But they were talking about, the reporter mentioned something about her experience working with perhaps the poorest country in the world. And Mother Teresa just stopped him in his tracks and said something like, No, India is not the poorest country in the world. You live in the poorest country in the world, the United States. And he was a little baffled. And he said, no, the poorest country in the world is right here with all of its technology and so forth. It's one of the loneliest countries on earth with modern isolation. And, of course, Mother Teresa was speaking about, you could say, spiritual poverty or spiritual, impoverishment of the soul. Many third world countries don't have this problem. many of the people who come here from third world countries, either visiting or to live, have a very, very difficult time because of the family breakdown in our society and the kind of isolation, alienation, and loneliness that brings upon people just being in our culture today. They're not used to that, even though they have no material goods. They could be living in a hut and have nothing technological like we do, and yet 9 out of 10 times, they're a lot happier than people from this country who have grown up in this country are. So, John, let us begin, after that little monologue, with some more of the causes. What do you think causes this epidemic of contemporary times, at least in the Western world, of loneliness?
Well, I think there's a few causes. If we're talking about root causes, some of them are just more technologically based. So for example, the automobile, right? Mobility has given people the ability to go away from their villages, to go visit other places far more easily than they could have in centuries and centuries prior.
It's funny, when we talk about technology alienating us, we never really think about the automobile, but you're right, that's almost where it began.
Yes.
The automobile, it's like a little tiny moving home, or at least temporary.
Well, particularly
residence.
If you have a Suburban.
Yeah. And, of course, the whole thing about courting and dating changed drastically with the automobile.
Oh,
for the first time in history, young people were actually together in an enclosed private area.
Yes, away from the chaperone.
Away from the chaperone, away from the family. Yeah, a lot of things changed with the automobile. So, yes, not only does it create that kind of privacy that may or may not be good, for especially for young people, but it also creates, what you're saying, a mobile culture. We're a movable culture. We move from place to place, and we don't very often have roots and permanent community.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, I know in the past I've had conversations with you and one of the other rotating guests, Bob, and there is a comparison of how many spots people lived in, and I thought I had moved around a bit, and both of you put me to shame on how many places both of you have lived. Was it at least a few dozen for each of you over the years?
I wouldn't say a few dozen for me.
It seemed that way, at least.
Yeah?
Yeah, my eyes started glassing over after the first dozen or so.
We live in a mobile society. People are looking out particularly for themselves, at least primarily. And so if there's a better job or a better opportunity for growth and all of that ambitious thing, people very often move from state to state seeking it or chasing it to the detriment of family life. And we might as well start there. Technology tends to alienate family members from each other.
Well, I wouldn't say it's by its nature, because technology is a tool.
Yes.
I think a lot of it is how people view the usage of technology. So there's this old saying in philosophy that all all philosophies find their roots in either Plato or Aristotle.
Yes.
And when it comes to the structure of a society, that, I would say, is very, very true. So in Plato, in the foundation of a society, at least in his Republic, it wasn't the family, it was the function. So the jobs, the tasks that people are doing, whereas in Aristotle, the foundation of the society was actually the family. So the family is like this mini society. It's the precursor to the society at large.
Yeah.
But without that functioning family, as the base unit, then the society at large will actually not function as well as it could.
I think Aristotle had something there, because the family is the only buffer, in a sense, between the state and the individual. And if the family breaks down, who takes up that slack? The government.
Right.
And so you have more and more governmental interference in the individual's lives without that basic unit between the individual and the government.
And the government is far more inefficient and far less caring than a family is, at least in potential.
Yeah.
Right? So
right.
There's this principle of subsidiarity, that those who are closest to something are best able to handle it. Right? So why do you want some bureaucrat who's 50 levels above you making decisions on how your day-to-day life is lived?
Well, isolation is something that's very real today, something very widespread, and it's a problem, and it's caused a lot of deleterious effects that we'll talk about in the second segment. But let's just get a little beneath the surface about why this is a problem, why the family breakdown, why the neighborhood breakdown, and the lack of personal contact is so important and so lacking today. It seems like, John, that we as persons, not as animals and not as plants and not as minerals, but as persons, we are actually created, it's part of our nature, to be in relationship. And outside of relationship, social, family, personal, outside of that, we are like a body without food or water. Something is very much lacking, essentially.
Oh, yes, very much indeed.
We're created to be social beings.
Oh, of course we are. I mean, without it, honestly, if I'm cooped up in my apartment more than a couple of days, I get the heebie-jeebies.
Mm.
I have to get out, even if it's just walking through a store, being around people.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not married. I have no kids of my own, but where I work in a call center. I won't say what I'm not permitted to say what I do, but I mean, I'm around hundreds of people, talking all the time.
So, and that's a good outlet for you psychologically.
Yeah, being around people.
So we're made for that. We're not, contrary to what many moderns might think, since Thomas Hobbes, we're not radical individuals. We're not made that. That's not our nature. We need to communicate and we need to relate. Where does that ultimately come from? In other words, who are we made in the image of?
It starts with a G, ends with a D.
So
the middle is an O.
I think I can put that together. So God himself is a community or a communion of persons that eternally and perfectly relate to each other in a love relationship.
Yes, the image and likeness of God is very fascinating. It's easy to let it roll off the tongue, but to actually come up with ways in which we can understand that more poignantly. So that's both in the individual, as far as like the intellect and the will.
Yeah, the rational part of us. Yeah.
And these powers emanate from us.
Just
also,
like God. Yeah.
And also in the relational aspect of a family. You have the husband who's analogous to God the Father. You have the wife who's analogous to the second person, the Trinity.
Right.
Then the children are analogous to the Holy Spirit. This is the fruit of their love. There's this union, but also this procession forth of this gift of life.
So just really quickly, as the Creed says, the Son is eternally begotten of the Father, and we see this metaphorically illustrated in the Book of Genesis, where it comes forth from the side of Adam, proceeds from Adam, and they become two individuals, and then the relationship between both, or the love between the Father and the Son, eternally spirates in the Holy Spirit, and we could see that the love between Adam and Eve, or the man and the woman, sometimes comes about 9 months later, and you have to name it. It's a child.
Jose.
A conceived child.
Sally.
And so Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, just like the Holy Spirit proceeds from the love between the Father and the Son, so too does the child, in a sense, proceed from the love between the mother and the Father.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you do have that that image or that reflection of God as Trinity, which tells us, in a nutshell, love in and of itself is Trinitarian by its very nature. You always have lover, beloved, and love, which is the love between the lover and the beloved.
Yeah. Very much Trinitarian. Actually, I don't know if I could say any more beyond that.
It's
well, part of it is
mind-blowingly beautiful. Actually.
It is. It's very beautiful, and there is a certain mystery to it. Not so much in a Sherlock Holmes way, like these are the clues. I will find the murderer. I am Hercule Poirot.
All right.
No, but it's more in the mystery in that we can get a certain sense of how it works, but because it is beyond the capacity of our intellect.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about God, who has this infinite, all-knowing intellect, how can the finite intellect fully understand that? Well, it can't.
It can't.
But it can come to a certain understanding of the basic structure.
Certain apprehension of what we're talking about, but certainly not a fullness of understanding.
Yes.
Yeah, so after the break, I want to continue this notion of the cause, and as the more that we ignore the fact that we're personal relational beings, the more that we're going to be lonely and isolated and depressed and everything else that goes with that. And we're going to talk about the effects, too, right after this break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. Your host, Paul Morano, along with my guest tonight, Mr. John Tutoris, on this topic of loneliness. Looks like we have a James Taylor song taking us out into the first break, Cindy. Okay. Ah, you've got a friend. Ah, perfectly apropos. We'll be right back. You can talk to us at 978-454-4980. Sounded like the Beatles. I don't remember that song, though.
Yeah, you don't remember the Yellow Submarine album, Hey Bulldog?
I don't remember Hey Bulldog. That was the name of that song?
Yep.
All right. There you go. You stumped me on a Beatles song. Again, Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano here in the studio, in with my special guest tonight, Mr. John Tutoris. And we're talking about the loneliness crisis. The loneliness crisis. All right. So, John, before the break, we've been talking about the causes and why, what we are, what our nature is, and how we are relational beings, and how that has been challenged a lot today, particularly by technology. But one of the greatest things, as I think you'll concur, that technology has done to us, and I'm not talking about the internet or anything like that, has created this little tiny pill that might be called the new forbidden fruit of modern times. And why might that be? Because it is a hormonal pill that has rendered female human beings temporarily sterile so that we can pursue other things while having sexual relations. Now, unfortunately, among other reasons that we can talk for hours on the problems with the pill, it has created a family situation where we went from 5 or 6 children per family back when I was a kid, all of a sudden to 1.4, which we have today. Now, of course, anybody with a little bit of wisdom can see that this greatly contributes to our loneliness crisis today, when there are a lack of siblings and there's a lack of family cohesion and unity. Couple that with the family moving around a lot, and of course the skyrocketing divorce rate that occurred right after the pill was popularized. It all contributes, John, to this problem we have with isolation today.
Oh, big time, big time. And I would actually argue that the seeds to that great selfishness towards the sharing of love, because really what the pill enables to a far more effective degree than something like the condoms or other contraceptive tools that were out there beforehand, is it allows for that selfishness to be employed to such a higher degree, sex without responsibility. But the seeds for that had been planted for decades and decades beforehand. For example, in 1930...
Yeah, the Christian world.
Yeah, in the Christian world, I mean, that's where, if you break it where people think there's a moral foothold, I mean, all the Christian denominations up until 1930, across the board, universally thought of artificial contraceptive as intrinsically evil.
Now, note, John, that we don't have a situation like we do today in 2018 where you sort of have a division between those who are Christian and then regular society. All society was Christian back in those
days.
It was
across the board.
It was part of the fabric of society. So basically, when you're saying that all Christian denominations condemned contraception all the way up to 1930, we're talking about virtually all people condemning it.
Pretty much the entire Western world.
Yes.
The entire Western world, and then the small snowball, if you will, that really kind of let that avalanche eventually build up is the 1930 Lambeth Conference. So every 10 years...
The Anglican Church of England.
The Anglican Church of England would meet in Lambeth, and then they would vote on doctrine. And so it had actually been... they tried to get it through the first two sessions before that, so in the 1910 and 1920, but it wasn't until 1930... where they broke through and they said yes. Now, only in certain circumstances in marriage, but it had started. The avalanche had started.
Yeah, it was actually very, very narrow circumstances if you read it. And I can't remember the exact wordage, but the Anglican Church opened the door a tiny crack for very extraordinary circumstances between married couples to the potential, the possibility of using some kind of birth control method. Unheard of. Until this occurred in the entire Christian world.
That's right. Yeah. And by the time you get to the 1950s and the pill comes out in, what, 1960-ish?
It was invented in 60 and became popular right around 1970 or late 60s.
Yep. And one of the big evidences that not only the secular world, but really the Christian world, too, at least as far as those who would say they're part of it, that they were not on board with traditional Christian morality on this is in 1968 Humanae Vitae.
Humanae Vitae,
which basically just confirmed the long-standing, long-held practice and belief that artificial contraception, by its nature, is intrinsically evil.
Right.
And so, wasn't changing anything at all, just reaffirming what had always been taught.
Always been taught since the beginning of Christianity for 2,000 years. Now, what's interesting, what you said. From 1930, when the Anglicans opened the door a crack to contraception, all the way till 1968, when the Catholic Church again reaffirmed Christ's condemnation of this artificial separating of life and love, every single from 1930 to 1968, every Protestant denomination seemed to fall like dominoes from 1930 to 1968. So by the time you have Pope Paul VI writing this simple, beautiful doctrine about church
and
teaching.
And reasonable.
Very
reasonable.
Extremely reasonable. You have almost no Christian denominations at all following the church's longstanding teaching, except for the Catholic Church. And you have Catholics wondering if the Pope is going to change it. And unfortunately for them, but of course fortunately for truth, that's impossible. You can't change natural law and contradictions of human nature.
Truth by its nature is unchanging.
Right. Okay. So anyway, that's what started the whole thing. And of course, in July of 2018, July 25th, we're going to be celebrating or at least commemorating the 50th anniversary of that most important document of modern times, Humanae Vitae.
Yeah, that was a... it was actually necessary in so much as that the culture and many within the church, including not just the lay people, but clerics too. I mean, even back in the 50s, you had priests who were recommending to married couples to artificially contracept.
Right, right.
This is going back at least 10 years before, and this is in the Catholic Church.
There were priests and a few bishops that were not on board with their church's teaching.
That's correct.
Which meant, literally, with God's teaching.
Yes, yes. Yeah. In fact, by the time he gets to Humanae Vitae in 1968, to give you an example of how soundly it was rejected in many circles in the church, in Canada, all but two of the bishops in Canada signed what it's now known as the Winnipeg Statement,
right,
where they all met together and they basically signed a letter that says, let's agree to disagree.
Yeah, well, see, all of this, of course, relates to our selfish nature.
Very selfish.
Yeah, we want pleasure without consequences. We want to separate pleasure from purpose, which means that we want to live selfishly. And as a result, we have created a Western civilization now that is producing 1.4 children per family. And, of course, the Arab Muslim population overseas and the Hispanic population over here in the Western Hemisphere are going to fill that void, and they are certainly doing it at a good pace right now, so that Western civilization and Western culture will probably die off in a generation or two, and we're going to have to start all over again with Christian culture when things start to break down.
I wouldn't say fully, but there's certainly an amalgamation that happens. You can see even evidence of that, too, when you've had various conquered areas in Europe. You go to certain parts of Spain where the Moors had conquered, and you can see the remnants in the architecture. You get this interesting hodgepodge of cultures and what they left behind. So I don't think it would be a complete die-out, but certainly there's a great shrinking. And even Pope Benedict, very interesting enough, when he was a priest back in 1970, he even predicted this.
Yeah.
Not like he was looking at his crystal ball or anything. He was just looking at things reasonably, the trends that were going, and if they continue, this is what's going
to
happen.
It's interesting how many people look to look to Pope Francis as a pioneer in progressive theology. And I put that in quotes because there really is no such thing. But the world uses these terms, so I will. Pope Francis himself reaffirms the Church's teaching on contraception, and he is about to proclaim Pope Paul VI, who wrote Humanae Vitae, a saint.
Yes.
He's about to canonize the one who wrote this and reaffirmed the Church's teaching on contraception. So bringing all this back to the family and the isolation and the loneliness, it certainly contributes to that. You can't go from a healthy family institution to 1.4 children with over 50% divorce rate and expect to have healthy individuals living in our world today. You can't expect it.
Sure. And the natural extension of that contraceptive mentality is the abortion epidemic.
Of course.
That we experience not just here in the United States, but in pretty much all the Western countries, as well as a lot of your communists in other countries, too.
Every country who has legalized abortion has first legalized and accepted contraception.
Yeah.
You see it in the United States. Griswold versus Connecticut and contraception was 1965.
Yep.
Roe versus Wade was 1973. You just saw it in Ireland. 1979, believe it or not.
Yes.
They instituted laws prohibiting the sanctions against contraception in Ireland.
And that was before the no abortion amendment was added to the Constitution. It was almost like that amendment was a stopgap to try and stem the tide of what was really happening.
Of the contraceptive mentality that was happening. And, of course, in 2018, you know what happened last week with the abortion vote. So, yes, no question, the acceptance of contraception directly leads to a people's accepting of abortion. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here with John Tudorus. So, John, all of this and coupled with technology has created this firestorm of loneliness in our country, and we see it with some of the effects that are going on. And I'll just throw out some, and you can elaborate. The opioid crisis is at a truly a crisis rate. The pornography addiction crisis is truly at a crisis rate, even though people aren't talking about it as much as the opioid crisis because they're more shameful to talk about that. And then there's the suicide crisis of young people has skyrocketed. Just looking at those three things alone, and there are a whole lot more that we can talk about here. What would you say about those things?
We're a lonely people. Nature abhors a vacuum. So what ends up happening is the things that ought naturally be there by our nature. If we had healthy communities, healthy families in their structure, that people in general would not be seeking these things. And there would, and not even just that, but even if you have people who inevitably might fall and seek these things, they'll have people that'll be there that care about them, that'll be there to try and intervene.
Yeah.
Say, look, this is not good, this is not healthy.
So there's a natural safety net for when we mess up.
Exactly.
That was there in earnest, several decades ago.
And we're missing a lot more of that now.
Well, so not only do we have those that void of personal relationship, but with that, I think, also comes a deeper problem, and that is a lack or a dearth of meaning and purpose in life. When you're brought up in a secular materialist mentality that so many young people are brought up with today, not only through the media, but through parents who have been brought up that way now. We're in our second generation of losing people to the ravages of secular progressivism. When you have people growing up like that, they truly are lacking something desperate in their souls, and most of them don't even realize it, and that is the meaning and purpose of their very existence.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, that goes to the show we had a couple of shows ago that I was a guest on, where we were talking about the shallowness in our education, right?
Mm.
I mean, why don't questions about the meaning and purpose of life come up? I mean, yeah, you need reading, writing, and arithmetic in order to function, but, I mean, you could just aimlessly function through life. You can follow a map to all sorts of aimless directions, but unless you have a real good, substantial goal of where you're going to, what's the purpose?
Right, exactly. And when we were, maybe the generation before us, that was established, believe it or not, in public schools. There was prayer in school. There was talk about the meaning and purpose of life. Heaven and hell were not forbidden in this kind of conversation. But, of course, the secular progressive storm that began in the in earnest, really, in the early 70s, took all of that away. So all of its any depth of talk of the meaning of our the condition of our human existence has been eradicated from the public square, pretty much. But at least, even if that were the case, you would go home to your family and you would have that family supper time. That was like the sacred meal. It was in the domestic church, which is the family, that sacred meal, which is the Eucharist in the parish, is on a natural level the supper time every single night. The family would gather, you would share food and discuss real issues, real problems with each other. Of course, a lot of that has been taken away because of everything that we talked about earlier.
And not even just that. I would even add in on the technology side, TV and media.
Mm.
And again, they're tools. It's not saying
and
that
now
TV cell
phones.
Is evil.
Yeah.
But just the substituting of something far more deeper and substantial, although maybe it's quieter, but far more substantial for something where there's just busyness.
Yes, indeed. And I am hearing some music. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. Is this an old Irish tune?
No. I think it is.
She's saying no. Well, maybe when we get back from the break, you'll tell us what it is.
I'm feeling like we should river dance, Paul.
You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Paul Morano, your host, with my guest John Tudoris. This is our last break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. 678. Yeah. Rod Stewart, ladies and gentlemen. Talking about loneliness, I assume. 978-454-4980, our phone number here at Beneath the Surface. Tonight we're going beneath the surface on the problem of loneliness. Guest John Tudor, I'm Paul Morano. We have about, what do we have about? We have about 15-ish minutes left. So if you want to squeeze in a phone call, love to have you. 978-454-4980, Mr. John. All right, so just to recap a little bit, we talked about causes and effects of the problem of loneliness, and we talked two general basic causes that, when combined, hell breaks loose, and that is breakdown of the family, contraceptive mentality, the selfishness of human nature, and the technology that enables us to be selfish. All of that combined has created a culture of loneliness. And we talked about some of the effects of that. Certainly drug abuse, the rise of opioid addiction, the rise of teen suicides, the rise of pornography and other sex addictions, and so on. It's all around us. Loneliness is painful, John.
Yes.
And it causes depression because we are actually living outside of our nature. And when that happens, we feel very down, very stagnant, very depressed. It's a very painful situation. We're not making light of this tonight.
No, not at all. It's it's in some ways the pain is caused by a certain confusion where when things aren't synced in the right way,
yeah,
things are off kilter. It's like a puzzle, right? If someone has the wrong piece and they're trying to smash it in the wrong one, the pieces get broken, they don't function well, and then when you try and put them back together the right way, the pieces can be damaged, and it's very hard to fit them back in the right way.
So it's very frustrating.
Right. It's always best, if possible, to start off right the first way, in virtue.
The problem, though, and I know that I struggled with this when I was a teenager, things haven't changed all that much in mentality, that there is a balance to be made and a struggle actually out there to in your choices as to whether there's basically alienation and socialization, and sometimes socialization can be bad for you because so many of your peers are following the world.
Oh goodness, yeah, and it's actually if someone is trying to do things the right way, right?
They're ridiculed.
They are.
Yeah.
Well, think about it, and I remember this growing up, and I'm sure you remembered it too, and even now I see it in media. If a kid is a virgin and they want to stay so until marriage,
yes,
they're ridiculed.
Which is, by the way, congruous to our human nature. We are meant to fully and exclusively give ourselves to our spouse.
Yes.
Not to others beforehand. Yes.
It's basically when you disrupt that, even though it seems very common,
right,
it's actually not the norm when you consider what our human nature is meant for.
The natural order is being ignored today.
Yes.
And so you get out there as a young person and you don't want to be isolated. You don't want to be alienated. But when you get out there, you have so many young people that are blindly like sheep following the world to slaughter. And you know, at least deep in your heart, that you don't want to go that way, but what are the alternatives? You either go off the cliff or you sink down into a sinkhole that seems unending.
It's actually, there's the threat of loneliness.
Yeah.
So unless you go with the lemmings who are heading towards the cliff, at least for that short while, man, it feels like you're in good company.
And the truth is, though, this is the actual truth behind it, you are still lonely if you follow that kind of people.
Oh, yes.
Which are most people today, unfortunately.
And ultimately, even more so, the loneliness becomes worse.
So, loneliness doesn't necessarily mean aloneness, even though they do go together. Loneliness can certainly, like you say, be worse when you're around unlike-minded people.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk solutions then. we have to find, people have to find like-minded people.
Yes.
And make an effort to do so, because you're not going to find them outside your door.
That's right. Birds of a feather flock together.
Okay. How do you propose that you do this, and what other solutions do you propose to the loneliness crisis that we have today?
So, well, there's the working on our own self individually, and I would venture to say that most adults, certainly myself included, are tainted by, you know, a lot of the evils and the effects of loneliness. So what are the remedies? And the remedies are always the same.
Yeah.
So for us individually, it's, you know, whatever the vices are, the things that we're doing that are harmful to ourselves and to others.
Which exacerbate the loneliness.
Yes, and they do. They exacerbate the loneliness. And so the key, the remedy, is to practice the opposing virtue.
Practice the opposing virtue of the vice that you're stuck in.
Exactly, and make a concerted effort to do so. And it's impossible to practice on all of them. But the good news is they're all connected to each other. So if we actually just pick on one and say, you know what, I'm going to actually consciously practice that particular virtue
all right,
for a time.
Give me an example of what you're talking about here, where the tire hits the road.
For example, if I'm stingy towards others, right? I'm not generous. So what's the remedy is to give alms, right? If there's people in need, be generous.
Okay.
And actually make a concerted effort and say, identify.
Hmm.
All right, so this guy over here. And sometimes it's not even just things that you're giving. It's kindness, right?
Hmm.
So that guy over there, he seems like he's kind of lonely, and you just kind of ignore him. Well, instead, maybe say, say hello to him.
Okay.
You know, open a conversation.
Mm.
Do things like a little smile, right? Maybe a little joke if you know he'll take it okay. But something that opens up is the opposite of what you are conditioned to do that's harmful.
So in a sense, you have to try to force yourself to do this? As long as it's not awkward?
Yes.
Okay. Or dangerous, of course.
Yes, or dangerous. But the good news is that we are creatures of habit.
Yeah.
And so if it's something where at first there's an extra effort to do so, over time, that habitual nature of us starts to take over, and we do it just almost automatically.
Okay, so this speaks about some of the vices that we have. What about some of the things that are heavier or deeper than vice, like obsession or addiction?
Yeah, so obsession and addiction, some things we do need outside help.
Yes.
So obviously there's 12-step programs. AA, of course, comes to mind when it comes to alcohol addiction. And there's a very similar related programs that are out there to help people who are really hardcore into something where it's something that they don't have the ability to get out themselves.
Okay, so then there has to be a recognition that I can't do this on my own.
Yes.
And you have to humbly admit that to yourself.
Yes, a recognition, there really is something to it where you say recognition is half the battle.
If I'm not mistaken, it's either step 2 or 3 in the 12-step programs that you need to recognize that you need to submit to and rely on a higher power than yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and in fact, it's my understanding that the 12-step program itself is sort of a streamlined adaptation, if you will, of the Ignatian exercises.
Okay, which is
for people who aren't familiar with that, they're just exercises that people would do to increase in a virtuous life.
Yeah.
So they would actually, take certain things and focus on that for a while, and with the idea that we can only focus on so many things at once. But because all the virtues are connected, just like all the vices are connected, if we practice certain virtues, inevitably we always practice the others in conjunction with it.
Yeah, and the problem, of course, is that we seek things that give us that temporary pleasure or excitement that we try to, in a sense, be alive in the moment when we're depressed. But those things that we do, whether they be food-related or drug-related or sex-related, actually bring us deeper into the hole. It doesn't even keep us on the same level. It brings us deeper and deeper into the problem.
They're temporary pleasures, or at least the thought that there's going to be a temporary pleasure. And then, of course, we can lie to ourselves and think, if I'm going to miss something here. But really, we're not missing anything at all.
Right. Now, a lot of people today, John, are single, more so than in times past for various reasons. People with a spiritual or religious outlook on life tend also to have a very difficult time finding a soulmate, because so many people have been brainwashed by the world in the past few decades. So it's very difficult.
Oh goodness, yeah. Even try and halfway practice your faith, other people say, "Oh, you're so hardcore. You're so extreme."
So what's the solution to that? And I know there are a lot of older single adults that have felt like they've lost the boat and are feeling that isolation, that loneliness, and that depression.
A few things. One is always pray. Always pray. If we're made in the image and likeness of God, appeal to God for guidance and help. So that's number one, always.
Yes.
Second, of course, is, again, try and work on those things that might be barriers of ourselves for someone else, right? So if there's a vice in my life that would prevent me from being a good husband, I need to work on that. And the third, of course, is to actually seek like-minded people. And this goes to the aspect of community, right?
Mm.
So we need to seek like-minded persons. So in All some right. areas, you'll find, meetups. You'll find, young adult groups where people meet up. But the idea is that you're actually meeting with people.
And you, if you don't mind me getting personal for a moment, you're a single adult.
Yes.
And you're Catholic.
Yes.
So you have been involved in young adult groups for the past number of years.
Yes.
In and out, spontaneously. Have they helped at all?
They've certainly helped as far as finding and meeting other Catholics.
Hmm.
Have I found a spouse? No, because I'm still single and I'm not even close to engagement. But at the same time, I will say that I have found like-minded people.
Friendships.
Actually, friendships, you're a good example. Bob LeBlanc is another good example of people that I've met through these groups. And honestly, I'm all the better for it. I'm all the better for knowing people like you and Bob. And there's a group down in the Providence, Rhode Island area where I've met some people.
And it seems to me that in modern times, when families, are all over the place, and sometimes there are divorces and broken families too. For example, in my family, a lot of them are in Florida right now, and I know a lot of people are in the same boat, that families are sort of just splintered around the country. It seems more and more that that is the case. You need more and more community that is not your blood family to be part of your life.
Oh, in particular now, absolutely.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
So you would hope that the church would recognize this and take up that slack as it's fighting the evils that are causing the breakdown of the family.
Yes.
Be a part of these, in other words, attack the cause and be part of the solution for the effects of that problem.
Yes. The quirk on that, of course, is that the way the church is designed, it's not that there's always going to be like a priest or a person in particular authority who's going to be starting these groups. A lot of them are actually these groundswell things that are actually organized by regular people.
Very often, yeah.
Yes.
Regular lay people.
So that means that it's a joke, all volunteers step forward, everyone steps back except for that one person, and they're the volunteer.
That's funny.
But really, it's the idea that it's not always someone else who's going to be doing this. Sometimes it has to be you or me.
Yes.
Doing it. Well, think about this radio show, right?
Yes.
You're talking about things that most people don't talk about in a public forum. I mean, it had to be someone, right? And at some point you decided, well, you know what? No one else is doing it. I need to step up and do it.
So it's filling a void, an important void that's not happening. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Do you want to get in, give us a quick call? We have 2 minutes left here on Beneath the Surface this week. Is there anything else that comes to mind as maybe something we missed in the cause or the effects, or perhaps of the solutions to our widespread problem today of loneliness?
So there are a few more, just real briefly to touch on. One is, of course, we have policies that fuel the flames of our selfishness, and so seek to have policies that actually engender that community building, right?
As Dan Quayle once said and was widely ridiculed by the media and by Hollywood, promote family values.
Yes, that's hugely, hugely important. And along with that, too, if you're married, so in right quarter, you know, you don't want to be like the proverbial Navy guy who's got a wife and a, you know, a woman and a child in every port. You know, if you're in there and you are able to have children. I mean, obviously, you don't want to do it in any artificial or messed up way.
Yes.
And then lastly, if you're in the right disposition, consider adoption. There are unwanted children. And sometimes people are called to have that extraordinary love for children, even not of their own blood.
I'm just going to end on a cliche, and I'll add to that cliche. If you want justice, if you want peace, seek justice. If you want justice, seek the truth. There is no substitute for the objective truth. That's where it begins, and that's where we need to begin our journey to getting ourselves out of isolation, understanding the truth of human nature. Thank you, Mr. John Tudorus. You the man.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for listening to Beneath the Surface tonight, Palmer.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.